putting on makeup, getting ready to go. Gonna make it to the tailgate by 11 o'clock. And then it's Tito's and Red Bull until the game kicks off.
Oh my gosh, it's almost here.
Oh, I can't wait.
I can almost smell it.
Me too.
Maybe that's something else.
Smell that Tito's and Red Bull. Razorbacks.
I can't say that I've ever had the pleasure of Tito's vodka. But Tito's apparently it's quite a staple.
I don't drink a whole lot of Red Bull and vodka myself, but Tito's vodka is special. It's good.
Matt Stell will be appearing at a tailgate near you. More details on that to come. It's still being worked out with his people. My people are talking to Matt's people.
Yeah,
we can get him in studio talking on the show just about any time, but getting him, you know, to do a tailgate, that's a whole other story.
Getting the crank. Yeah, well, that's why I got people, because I don't even know what you're talking about.
Well,
I'm teasing. I sort of do.
Christy Doss is back on the Revolution Hotline. At Sports Biz Miss on Twitter. You can find her on her blog. She is a sports business writer for ESPN.com. She's been on the show many times. She's back. Christy, how are you?
I'm doing great. It's good to be back. How are you guys?
Oh, so excited. We actually had Coach Bielema on yesterday. He was in town for the Little Rock Touchdown Club, and we visited with him for a while. So it's just about here, and it is sometimes I wonder how we get through the summer without it, but we're excited.
You know, I was at SEC Media Days this year, and somebody asked me which I thought was the most entertaining coach, and almost always the answer is Steve Spurrier. He's always so much fun every year. But I thought Bielema was great. He sort of started out like low-key and giving the kind of answers you expect the coaches to get, but then he got kind of fired up about halfway through his question-and-answer session, and I think he's going to be a great addition to the SEC. I look forward to many future SEC Media Days with him.
I'm sure it was not lost on you that they decided to put Auburn and Arkansas first on the schedule next season, because there is a budding pool of bad blood that is welling up between Auburn and Arkansas and the coaching staff over there and the coaching staff here. So I commend the SEC commissioner and whoever else makes up the schedules for putting that together.
Well, it's always more fun for fans when you have those sort of, you know, not just the traditional rivalries, but some of the new rivalries that pop up. And my fiancé is an Auburn grad, so I am familiar with the growing rivalry there.
Yeah, well, and we love Gus too, because he's an Arkansas guy, but you know, it is one of those things, so we will not be rooting for him on that particular Saturday. So what do you make of the new schedule? We were talking about that at length. Arkansas fans, some of them are a little bit up in arms. It's not a surprise. We knew it was coming that the LSU game was moved off the end of the schedule. There are two schools of thought there. One, that the A&M LSU game is a little more compelling at this point. The other argument is that the SEC is trying to balance its schedule, and the Arkansas-LSU game is a good game, and they wanted to move it a few weeks up to try to help out there. Which one do you think is a little more accurate?
Well, you know, you're never going to make everybody happy with the schedule, and people hate change. You know, I'm a Florida grad, and there's always a lot of grumbling about Florida-LSU, whether they should be playing each other every year and that sort of thing. So that's the sort of conversation I deal with over here. I think the SEC is trying to make its schedule as compelling as possible. You want there to be good matchups. You want them to be at the right time of the season to be a good matchup, because they want it to be an entertaining game, not just for the people in the stands, but obviously the people watching on TV. They're getting ready to launch SEC Network next year. They're still trying to figure out how Texas A&M and Missouri fit into the schedule. And because they've only been in the season, you know, only been in the conference one full season, I think they're still working through how Texas A&M and Missouri come into the picture. And I think it's going to take a few years before we sort of settle into a schedule going forward that looks kind of normal, and, you know, where you see those traditional matchups in certain weeks. So I think we have to give the SEC a break and see how it goes.
Christy Doss joining us in the Zone on the Revolution Hotline. I don't know that you've written anything on this, although I'm sure you've talked about Manziel. I have seen some stuff about that. But I was curious about, I don't know if you've tried to calculate it, what the financial impact would be if for some reason he is not available to play this year. Any clue on that? I did see something you wrote about the impact of his jersey sales are somewhat limited, but the overall picture without him available, do you have any idea?
You know, I'm not sure that it makes that big of a difference. They got a huge boost last year because of the Heisman campaign and then his eventual win. So I think they did a study where they decided they got something like $36 million. I may have the number wrong, but I think it was somewhere around there in what they call advertising effect, which is essentially how much money you would have to spend to mount a national advertising campaign that essentially got your school the kind of attention that they got with Manziel's Heisman run. You know, I don't know that they were calculating that sort of into this year and counting on having that again and sort of counting on him being a Heisman favorite again. The move to the SEC has done wonders for them. Actually, when I looked at the numbers for their jersey sales and just merchandise sales overall last year, you know, what they could tie to jersey sales, which was not just Manziel, but everyone in every sport, was something like $59,000. But their sale of SEC co-branded merchandise, so any merchandise that had both Texas A&M and SEC logos on it, that number, I think, was at least twice as much as the jersey sales, and they really have attributed a lot of their success financially last year to it being their first year in the SEC and their fans being so excited about that. Now, obviously, it's going to be better for them if Manziel's on the field and having a good season. I don't think anybody would argue that, but I don't know that you're going to see like dollars coming out of their pocket if he's not playing. I think just the potential for more money wouldn't be there, but you know, they essentially have already got their money from season tickets and that sort of thing. So I think they're in pretty good shape either way.
The litigious society that we live in is on fire right now in the world of sports. I saw there was a new lawsuit out today. Former NFL players are suing NFL Films. They want a cut of the money from the footage that was used over the years, and we all are familiar with the Ed O'Bannon lawsuit. You delved into the impact of EA Sports and the college football video game. We've told our listeners over the last few weeks about how the SEC has pulled away from that. Schools can make individual decisions on it. The financial impact, though, you were able to find information on what exactly the bottom line is for these schools in their relationship with EA Sports.
Yeah, I don't think schools make as much money off of these EA Sports video games as people think, which was sort of the point of my piece. I wanted to show people I had seen the numbers and I knew what they were, and I realized last week people were really surprised by the jersey numbers, so I wanted to give them also these EA Sports numbers. And because that game, you know, the revenue is split between so many different parties. Not only does obviously EA keep part of the money, but they're splitting it with quite a few schools involved in the game. They're also splitting it up until now with the NCAA and the conferences and that, the bowls, there are bowl logos that are included in that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. So the schools that I talked to from the NCAA football game, the highest I found was at Wisconsin. They got just over $143,000 from the NCAA football game last year. Some of the ones on the lower end were UCLA and Texas A&M, who we were just talking about, who were both around $57,000. If you talk about sharing that money with the student-athletes, what the O'Bannon case is asking for is for one-third of that money to go to the student-athletes. We're not talking a lot of money at that point. You know, at Wisconsin, I think it would be something like $56,000. At Texas A&M, it would have been considerably less. And then you have to decide, you know, are you paying all the, you know, all the student-athletes? Are you paying just the football players? Does Title IX allow you to do that? You know, there are a lot of things that come into play there. But at the end of the day, no matter how they split it, we are not talking enormous sums of money here because there are so many parties involved in that game.
As someone who is nostalgic about this game, although I don't have time with two kids and a wife and a job to play much anymore, but I had the first game on Sega Genesis when the Bill Walsh version came out, so I've been playing it ever since it came out. What do you think this game looks like going forward? Will it look the same at all? I was talking to former Razorback quarterback Quinn Grofey, who is the most accomplished NCAA football guy I've ever faced. He beat me by like 1,000. And we were talking about this may be the last time it ever looks like this. Do you think that's the case?
I do. You know, the SEC, the Pac-12, the Big Ten have all said they won't license their conference marks, so there will be no references to those conferences in the game. I would be pretty surprised if the ACC and the Big 12 didn't follow suit. Those, you know, five power conferences usually make those sort of decisions in tandem. I was able to talk to quite a few bowl games. They all say that they haven't been approached about it yet, but they certainly didn't sound like they were jumping at the chance to sign on. So I think especially when we're talking about the bigger bowl games, some of those access bowls like the Rose Bowl, the Chick-fil-A Bowl, the Cotton Bowl, I would be surprised if any of them decide to be part of the game. And I was able to talk to somebody who has direct knowledge of the situation with the college football playoff. They have not announced a decision yet, because they haven't officially announced who their licensing agent is going to be going forward, and they're not going to make the announcement about the video game until after that licensing agent announcement. But this source told me that he would be very surprised if the College Football Playoff decided to license any of its marks for the game. I think there are some schools who are now deciding maybe they shouldn't be part of it. I mean, I just told you the numbers. It's not all that much money. Yet. The legal risk is much greater. If they're making, say, $56,000 off of the EA Sports game a year, you can rack up that much in legal fees pretty quickly. I'm an attorney. I know what we charge per hour. I've seen these cases drag out for years. O'Bannon's been going on, I think, since 08. You can eat through that pretty fast. So I don't think schools that decide to stay in it are even staying in it for the money at this point. I think they're probably staying in it because it's a little bit of a recruiting tool. I think that potential student athletes want to see someone who looks like them in this game. They want their friends back home to be playing a game that includes a player who looks like them. So maybe if they're down to two schools and one of those schools deals with EA Sports and the other one doesn't, you know, I don't think that's going to be like a primary deciding factor, but it sounds like the schools are a little freaked out that if they're not a part of it, that it might hurt recruiting. So I think it'll be probably a year before we know exactly who is going to be included in this game, but I know quite a few schools sounded a little gun-shy right now.
Kristy Doss joining us on the Revolution Hotline at SportsBizMiss on Twitter. You can follow her and check out her blog as well, kristydosh.com. Can I ask you a legal question real quick? I have a friend who, we were playing golf the other day, and he said every time he reads an email, he bills his client. Do you do that?
When I was a practicing attorney, yes.
Yeah. I'm in the wrong line of work. If
not,
I build somebody every time I...
when I read it, but if I have to answer it.
Yeah, if I got paid every time I answered an email, I would be a billionaire.
Look, I wish I still got paid that way. That's not how ESPN pays me, but if they did, I'd be doing pretty well.
Well, now you get paid to write books. We have been seemingly talking about Saturday Millionaires for about 2 years. It is finally upon us. I saw you, you're teasing us now. You put a chapter out on Twitter. When do we get the whole thing?
It is out September 10th, but it's been up for pre-order for a few months now. And what I heard is that finished books made it to the publisher yesterday, and that those orders are already on their way out to Amazon and Barnes & Noble, who will turn around and send them out to people who pre-ordered. So I think people who pre-ordered or go ahead and order now will get them before September 10th, but you'll start seeing it in bookstores hopefully on September the 10th. I'm looking forward to it.
How many pages?
I believe it ended up at 288. I know they played around with the font a couple of times, and it moved around, so I'm not sure what the final count was.
Well, look, I mean, I know my listeners, okay? And anything over about 45 pages in many cases, they're not going to do it. There's some pictures in there, though, right?
They can get it and pick out one chapter. You can probably get a chapter in 45 pages.
There you go. See?
And actually, I start out, I want to say it's chapter 2, talking about Bobby Petrino and the impact he had at Arkansas and sort of a debate over whether or not he was overpaid. And I used him as an example to talk about coaches in general, but maybe your listeners will find that chapter interesting. They can just skip to that one.
Yes. Well, I guarantee Arkansas fans will find that very sad to reminisce about that. But, yeah, I'm sure that is fascinating. The greatest impact, of course, he had was with that curb that ended his career at Arkansas, unfortunately. So
that's a weird. Is that a new name for fiance?
What's
that? Like a curb?
No.
Curb? Is that what you call it?
No, that's not good. Well, Kristy, we appreciate it. I do want to point out, too, and I told our morning host that I was going to ask you about this. We're about out of time, though, and I'm sure you have better things to do than to visit with us about this. But you are a very well-rounded writer, as we know. And I found one of your columns online about the top 10 lies by guys who have online dating profiles. And I found that extremely interesting, and I was a little bit, I guess I wasn't shocked, but it's so funny that people will lie about this stuff knowing that the people that they're, you know, eventually going to get to go out with, hopefully, are going to find out about it. So height is the number one thing they lie about. I'm like, that is the dumbest thing ever.
I love writing about online dating. Men's Health and Women's Day both sort of keep me as a ongoing freelance writer to write about online dating. I did online dating before I met my fiance, who I ended up meeting on Twitter instead of Match.com or eHarmony or wherever else I tried. And I still have so much fun writing these articles, but I have to tell you, I think it makes my fiance a little nervous because I have to Google all these things related to online dating, and then all my ads, you know, when I'm on websites, all those ads down like the right-hand side of the page will all be for online dating websites. I think it makes them a little suspicious, but
yes,
it's fun for me.
That is funny. I like that. We keep on his toes. Kristy, we actually we do Top 10 Tuesday every week, so we maybe just save this list and we'll go through this next week as a Top 10 Tuesday segment. So Appreciate the time.
Absolutely.
Look forward to the book. We certainly encourage everybody to get out and order your own copy because it's great stuff, and certainly folks down here are always looking for something football related to read. And we are about to immerse ourselves in the sport. We're so excited. So thanks so much for the time. We'll visit again.
Thanks for having me.
All right, take care. That's so funny. I love that. She's trying to keep her fiance on his toes.
That's so interesting. Yeah. I tell you what.